You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound. Sound of the start of another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. It's the Sunday edition. I'm your host, Mike Blewett. Along here with George Kurtz, going to take you around the horn of MLB for the next 2 hours, as well as dive into some NFL news. Got some who's hot, who's not from George today. And really a lot of good highlights from yesterday's games to talk about. And George, one of the things that I was looking at as I'm pouring through the highlights this morning, getting ready for the show, watching the games yesterday, you got Jonas Cespedes makes a grand entrance off of the DL yesterday, but you know, the game that really jumped out to me was the Rockies, because they continue their tear. They're now won 7 in a row, and part of those 7 is having beaten the World Series participants in their last 5 games, the Indians in Denver, and now here we are rolling over the Cubs in Chicago. But what I was struck by is yet another good start out of a rookie pitcher for the Rockies. And, you know, it's nice to have a manager that's a former pitcher in Bud Black. And yesterday we get another good outing out of Jeff Hoffman, who is a big part of the Troy Tulowitzki trade a couple of in 2015.
I think the Rockies are probably one of the biggest, should I say, pleasant surprises this season.
I totally agree.
Especially the pitch. We know you're going to hit in Coors Field. That's never a shock, right? Everybody's always beat up pitching in that ballpark. But their starting pitching has held together and is actually in the top 10 pitching overall in Major League Baseball. Now, it's June 11th. Can they do it for another 3.5 months? I still have my doubts, Mike, because if you were to name the Rockies starting pitchers, I mean, it's a whole bunch of nobodies.
It's four rookies. Heard of. Right. That's the thing that strikes me right now. I know they got some guys on the DL that are coming off. John Gray and is dealing with a stress fracture. He's doing rehab starts, but they have 4 rookie starters right now.
It's pretty amazing. Is it Bud Black? You know, is it him being a former pitching coach?
Yeah,
he knows how to turn this around. Have they found the secret formula there? Finally, after a couple of decades of how to pitch in Colorado, I think there's a lot of people wondering exactly what's going on here.
Yeah, so you have Hoffman, Antonio Sensatella, Kyle Freeland, and German Marquez. They're a combined 23-8 with a 3.51 ERA and 37 starts. That's not a small sample anymore. These guys are putting up crazy numbers, and as you said, you know, as I said, there's guys coming back, and as you said, maybe it is Bud Black. Maybe it does help to have a former pitcher there that can help with these younger starters and get them at least on the right track to start off their careers.
It does make you wonder, because we've heard for years now maybe the Rockies got to go with, pitchers can't go more than 3-4 innings, and you go to the next pitcher because they wear out, because they can't throw their curveballs. Ball doesn't move as much. Got to go fastball, low fastball, sinkers. You know, we've heard all this, humidor. Everything you could possibly think of as a solution to Coors Field. Now it's, I don't know, rookie pitchers. Maybe they're not smart enough to know how, or not veteran enough to know how bad Coors Field is.
Yeah, the blissful ignorance of youth, right?
So exactly, yes. That's what I was going with that.
So we'll talk a little bit more about the Rockies. Talk about Aaron Judge just destroying baseballs. George and I for the next 2 hours on the Roto Experts on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us on your Sunday morning, folks. It's George and I here until 10 o'clock. Fantasy Bagels and Baseball will take over for us. Tony Sicada will join us a little bit later today, around 9:40. Talk a little bit about DFS for the day, and then Tony will take Fantasy Bagels and Baseball after that. Al Melchior from 12 to 1, he'll do Fan Rag Fantasy Baseball, and then the producers will take over from 1 to 3. So a little bit more about that Rockies game. George, we had a couple of more homers. Charlie Blackmon and Mark Reynolds competing for that team lead. Mark Reynolds is a couple in front. They tie for the team lead with RBIs. So Mark Reynolds amongst people's favorite waiver wire pickups this year, or late round drafts if you're in a deep draft. But Mark Reynolds has been crushing it. He's not really slowing down as far as the power numbers are concerned.
Well, you think about it, it's amazing with Mark Reynolds. He was not supposed to start this season, right? Because it was supposed to be Ian Desmond. He was going to play first base. He gets hurt in spring training. Reynolds takes over, and now they can't take him out of the lineup. He's got 17 home runs, 53 runs batted, I believe. You're not taking that out of the lineup. That's just too good. And his batting average is, what, almost 80, 90 points higher than his career norm? I mean, oh, my God, what this guy is doing is pretty amazing right now. You know, I think I saw an interview with him about a month ago, and he said, well, yeah, got to hit the stay in the lineup. Well, he's doing more than that. Right now he's a mainstay in that lineup. And Charlie Black, we discussed it with Matt yesterday, does not get enough love. You could make an argument right now. Right now I think he may be the best fantasy player in baseball, but I was about to say, outside of Mike Trout, he may be that best player. And with Trout out of the game, it just may be Charlie Blackman. Doesn't get enough love.
I totally agree. 338 right now. Two more hits yesterday. Three more runs scored. They pounded the Cubs, by the way, 9-1. Clearly, the pitching in Colorado is a big story. And Hoffman went 6 1/3 with 8 strikeouts, only gave up the one run. But Charlie Blackman is just unbelievable right now. As you said, like, you don't need to say it anymore. He's might be the best player in fantasy baseball. You know, this is in the season that Mike Trout was having and that Bryce Harper is having, and Charlie Blackman hanging right there with all those guys. So good on him. The Cubs struggled yesterday as the Rockies were hitting the ball all over the park. Chris Bryant picks up a hit. Rizzo picks up a hit. Hayward picks up a hit and a run scored, but really nothing to be had there. Moving over to another game. Might as well talk about Cespedes since he started off coming off the DL in a nice way. 2-for-5 in the first game. By the way, the Mets won 2 games yesterday. A nice little bounce back for them. They sweep the Braves in the doubleheader. It was Cespedes going 2-for-5 in the first game with the grand slam. So nice start for Cespedes owners.
Yes. Now, you probably didn't have him in your lineup yesterday. Maybe you're not going to put him in until tomorrow if it's a weekly lineup league. But you're happy he's back, right? And he's hitting. Do I still worry about the hammy? Yeah, I do. I always do. This is not just a Cespedes. Almost any player, I worry about a hammy. I worry about hammies and groins or hamstrings the most. Mainly because you just don't know until you actually get on the field. Have to go. We said it yesterday. When he has to go chase down a double in the gap, you know, that's when you'll really test that. When he has to go to second on the ground, base hit to the gap, when he's trying to stretch into a double. That's when he'll really feel if that hammy is at full strength there. So I'll still worry there. But that being said, he's back in my lineup as soon as I can put him back in there.
Yeah, Gizelman with a nice start yesterday, George. 6 2/3, only gives up the 3 hits, 4 strikeouts. No runs plated against Robert Gizelman yesterday.
Yes, I mean, he's been one of like. I don't want to say disappointing because I don't know if that's fair. He's not someone up there with DeGrom, Syndergaard, Harvey, you know, Wheeler. He's not one of these guys. But he more was expected out of him this season, and he has been disappointing. He hasn't gotten it done. Been released in a lot of leagues now. Am I going to rush out right now and claim him again? Probably not.
Yeah, he surprisingly got 5 wins, but as you said, George, he's hovering at a 5 ERA. His ERA just dipped below 5 because of yesterday's good start. So to those of you in those deeper leagues, hopefully Gizelman added a little bit. Wilmer Flores, a couple of more hits yesterday, George. He's 3-15 on the season.
Yeah, listen, Wilmer Flores is another guy you can argue just hasn't gotten a chance. You know, I can understand, okay, you don't think he can play shortstop, doesn't have the defensive skills for that. I get it. But you got Cabrera playing short who has no range. I mean, none. None, nil, not a zero, zilch. You put Reyes at third base, and he's not really at third base. He's made mistakes there, but you wanted to give him a shot over Flores. Why are you not going with the younger guy here, the guy who has more talent, is beyond me. This is not a Conforto situation where Conforto obviously should have played, but I think it's close to people think. I think William Flores could play the game. Defensively, yes, I think he may be a problem at times. But so is Jose Reyes at third base. It's not much of a difference. And Flores can hit. Reyes can't.
Yeah. Steven Matz, as we flip over to the second game, Steven Matz with a quality start as well. 7 innings pitched, only 5 hits. Gives up the 1 earned run. So, obviously, a good start here for Steven Matz.
That's not a shock. We know Matz can pitch. The question is, when's the next injury happening? Matz's history at every level is two things. A, he can pitch. He's going to pitch well. And B, he's going to get hurt. He never lasts long. You know, so that's the thing. Maybe he does make it the rest of the season since it's a shortened season already for him. Maybe he does. Maybe he gets hurt in August. Maybe he gets hurt in July. Maybe he gets hurt next week. That's the problem with Matz. It's relying on him to make another 15, 20 starts this season. I can't do it. But while he is pitching, I do want him in my lineup.
Totally agree. And in some ways, George, if he does get hurt, at some point this season, and it's not a freak accident, you know, getting hit by a batted ball or something like that. I think people will finally, and the Mets will sort of move on in some ways. Now, it doesn't mean that you release the guy, but it just means that all confidence will be gone. This is, in some ways, I think, his last chance to kind of prove that he can be a contributor, a regular contributor at the major league level for the Mets.
I don't even know if pitching the rest of the season could prove that. Because once again, you already missed 2 months. Yeah. I think you have to go through next season and not get hurt. I just don't listen. You know, Mike, you and I both know this. The human body's not meant to throw overhand, and not everybody, and by that I mean every pitcher, is able to handle it. Matt is hardly the only person we put in this category.
I agree.
There are quite a few pitchers who get hurt early and often every season, and we know it's going to happen. You know, it's just the body's not built for it. Just like there are some football players, I understand it's a more much more physical, brutal sport, but there are some football players who get hurt more than others. Their body just can't handle it. That's not one of the skills they have. Same thing going on here with Matt. He's got talent, a whole truckload of talent. But he's never. I don't know if he'll ever be someone you can rely on to pitch 180 innings, more or less 200-plus innings.
Right. So a little bit more from this second game, Jay Bruce. Three-run homer, his 16th of the year, George. He's hitting .258, but still contributing. Obviously, Jay Bruce with a nice game yesterday.
Absolutely. And now, listen, I'm kind of happy for Bruce because I think he sort of went to a tough situation last year, right? He gets traded for Cincinnati. Didn't ask to be traded. Got traded. He got traded to New York, and that can be tough. But I think we always forget how these players are human. He had to leave his family, go from Cincinnati to New York. You're going to a middle of a playoff situation. You're going to a completely different ballpark. You know, you're going from a bandbox to almost a Grand Canyon there in Citi Field, and you're expected to hit and play immediately. I think we forget they're human sometimes. It's a change of scenery. Everything's different. You know, your whole routine's all screwed up, and it might take players a certain amount of time to get adjusted to it. You know, that's why these midseason trades don't always work out, not even close. So it's good to see that he did figure it out during the offseason. He said he took advantage of New York City. His family's living in New York City. He's not afraid of the city.
Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes we assume that, but his family's living in it. He's embracing New York City. It just took him some time.
Yeah, look, I'm really easy on players that come over, especially to New York, and come over to try and make a transition, whether it's midseason or, frankly, when they come over as a free agent. I usually think it's going to take guys some time. So that first year or first half year, I just consider it an adjustment period. So for me to have a guy traded to the Yankees or the Mets and expect him to go out there and kill it, I don't have those expectations. I usually give the guy a sort of a half year or a year to make that transition. And Jay Bruce was able to do that, make that transition. Obviously, he struggled last year. He took a lot of heat. Some people wanted him moved off the team in spring training, but here he is in producing. So good for him.
Yeah, I still wonder if the Mets will move him, though. It has nothing to do with his play on the field, but they still have a logjam. You know, they still got to get rid of somebody. Mm-hmm. And I think Bruce, now that he's hitting, could bring back a good piece at the deadline. You know, and the Mets, I don't think they're going to get back in the race. Maybe they do. You know, there's a fifth wild card. Maybe they do get back into it. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. But I wonder if the Mets are going to be looking to shop Jay Bruce. Like I said, not for his play on the field, not because of the kind of person he is or anything like that, but because it would benefit the team to rid themselves of one of these outfielders. And Curtis Granderson's not hitting. Lucas Duda.
204 for Granderson.
Yeah, so he's not getting moved. Duda, I don't think that's going to happen. Not too many teams need a first baseman, and you're not trading Conforto. You know, that's not happening, or Suspenders for that matter. So Jay Bruce, I think you will hear his name come up quite a bit in trade conversations.
I think that's fair. And the last thing on this game, Wilmer Flores, I did mention the first game, but George, he picked up 4 more hits in the nightcap.
Pretty good day. Those 2 doubleheaders yesterday, there's pretty good days for a lot of players.
Yeah, absolutely. So you loaded up on some of your fantasy stats. We will look at the Rays after the break and talk a little bit about, like I said, the Yankees. I mean, Aaron Judge just keeps killing it. The Yankees hitting more home runs yesterday, 5 homers on the day. Castro, Holiday, Judge, George, they just don't stop. This team can really mash right now.
Yeah, they're coming at you in all sorts of different ways. I had a good DFS night last night because I didn't believe in Chris Tillman.
Oh, we'll get to his start after this. I don't know what Buck's going to do. You look at June, and it's an 80 RA. You got problems. Mike and George back after this. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. George Kurtz, Mike Blewett, hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. If you want to give us a call today, feel free. 844-843-6879. That's 84-FNTSY. And you should go to therotoexperts.com, exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package. It's your ultimate bench coach for the 2017 season. Stay ahead of the pack with our in-depth statistical breakdowns, trend analyses, and player insights. Become a waiver wizard and learn how to scan the numbers like a roto scientist. We'll help you set the ideal lineups every week, and this season you get a built-in fantasy training staff with our new injury advisor powered by InsideInjuries.com. So get the rotoexperts.com exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package now and soar to the top of the standings. Enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount. So, George, moving over to that Orioles-Yanks game. Yankees take the game 16-3. They bomb five homers, like I mentioned before the break. Judge, Castro, Holiday, Sanchez. Is that right? Gregorius. That's the only one I missed. I mean, George, right now the Yankees' 6 and 7 hitters are Gary Sanchez and Didi Gregorius. Sanchez, 279 with a bullet. He picks up four RBIs yesterday. Gregorius hitting 325 with 2 for 5 yesterday with two RBIs. I mean, with Castro's hitting homers like that, hitting 324, Sanchez, 6-hitter, Gregorius, a 7-hitter, and he can't move him up because Judge, Holiday, and Castro and Hicks are in front of him.
Yeah, it is a murderer's row again what the Yankees are doing here, and no one saw this coming. We didn't know what kind of hitting Judge was going to be. You know, that we didn't know that. With Sanchez, we saw that last year, but he got off to a slow start. I think Gregorius and Castro have been underrated for a couple of years now. Yes. They both, Gregorius has really turned into one hell of a player. I mean, he's a very good defensive infielder. He's not fantastic. He's not Anderson Simmons or someone like that, but he's a good, solid defensive player. And he's turned into a very good hit against lefties and righties. Another guy's going to hit 20 home runs, especially if he didn't miss the first month of the season. Castro, he can always hit with the Cubs. He was more of a head case, right? Made some boneheaded, had mental lapses. We'll call it mental lapses in the field there. So the Cubs moved on there. And, you know, the Yankees got him for a song, too. You know, yep. Castro, I know Castro gets obliterated for some bad free agent deals, Jacoby Ellsbury, but he's also made some steals and trades. And we talked about Hicks yesterday, and he got him for a backup catcher. You know, so he's made some really good deals here to get all these guys, and it's worked out quite well in the Yankees' favor. You mentioned it. They can't move up in the lineup because everyone's hitting. I mean, really, who do you want to move down? You know, someone's got a bat 6th and 7th. The only negatives are the 8th and 9th place hitters are pretty much just two automatic outs in Headley and Carter. But even Carter will be replaced sometime next week, I would assume, with Greg Bird coming back.
This is true. Those are the weak spots. And heck, even Carter picked up two hits yesterday as they destroyed Chris Tillman. Chris Tillman, George, 1 1/3 yesterday, 9 earned. Gave up the 7 hits, 3 walks, gave up 3 homers. His ERA is over 8. He's 1-4 in the season. What does Showalter do? They're already in trouble with their starting pitching, and it's just getting worse.
Well, this is not Showalter's fault. This is upper management. I mean, come on.
I agree.
We can all see this happening. All right, I understand Gossman hasn't pitched as well as you thought he was going to do. He's been a severe disappointment. Bundy's been probably a little bit better than what you expected. But everybody else, I mean, what were you expecting from these guys? We've known Jimenez is a bust. You know, Tillman, come on, he's been average at best now for a couple of years. So, I mean, they have starting pitching problems. If you don't go out and fix it, they're in the offseason. You're going to try and fix it now? Good luck. Good luck. You'll pay a heavy price now to go acquire a Quintana or someone like that to help your rotation. So this is the problem with the Orioles. They're sort of like the 80s Yankees, the upper 80s Yankees, hoping to win a lot of 7-6 games.
Yeah. That starting pitching is gone from shaky to brutal right now. So on the flip side of things, Luis Severino, George, yet another good outing for him. He's 5-2 on the season. Picks up the win yesterday by going 7 innings. He got tons of run support, but he limited them. 2 hits, 1 earned, 8 strikeouts for Luis Severino.
Yeah, there was actually a lot of, if you watch the Gators, some buzz that maybe last night was going to be a special night blowout. Orioles weren't hitting. No Machado in the lineup. Didn't work out that way. He did give up a couple of hits, a couple of runs. But that being said, Severino's been fantastic. I think he's only got a couple of, 5 wins on the season. Yankees generally, for as good as the offense they haven't hit in his starts. But they certainly made up for that last night. You know, Severino, I think you and I were talking during the break, was pretty horrible last year, right? Mm-hmm. Another guy who sort of needed to make that adjustment to be a starting pitcher, and he's done that in spades. I mean, he looks great. He got the fastball slider. The question about Severino has always been, can he develop a third pitch? you know, to keep people off the slider, keep people off the fastball. He has the change. It's not a great change, and it doesn't need to be great. You only need to throw it 10, 12 times a game to have, just to, so batters are aware you have it. It's in the back of their mind, so they have to stay back a little bit. So once again, that's paying off as well. And the other question with Severino was always, can he last the full season as a starting pitcher? You know, some scouts believe he was destined for the bullpen, mainly because he doesn't use his lower half. He's all upper body and arm. I wonder eventually if that's going to lead to some arm problems, but it's working out this season.
Yeah, he's still only 23 years of age. Keep in mind, now he hasn't lost since the first day of May. He's 5-2 with a 2.75 ERA, 1.02 WHIP, and an 84-18 K to walk ratio over 75 and a third innings. So no complaints there about Luis Severino. And I was struck yesterday by a stat that they showed on Fox during the game, and that is through his first 11 starts. He's now has 12 starts in the season here, but through his first 11 starts yesterday, since they showed this during his first 11 starts comparing last year to this year, he was 0-8 last year. His ERA was over 8 at this point last year, or that point last year through the 11 starts, and comparing it to this year, it's such a huge turnaround. I'm happy for him. Obviously, I'm happy as a Yankees fan, but gosh, it's just just leagues better than it was last year. He did get moved to the bullpen last year after that 11th start because he had been so bad.
Yeah, he was. Like I said, a bad season, you know. But credit him, he's turned it around. Credit the Yankees for helping him turn it around. You know, they've done a very good job here. The power arm has always been there. We know he could throw it and throw it hard. Like I said, for me, it was that third pitch and trusting, maybe even more so, trusting to throw that third pitch. Yeah, you have to be able to trust that it's not going to get hit 400 feet. I get it. And credit, like I said, credit goes around all around here. I think he's only got the 5 wins, so I think he needs to do better in that department. Probably get some Cy Young votes. But if he can get up there, we get on a nice little streak here, I think he can be in the Cy Young conversation at the end of the year. He won't win it, but I think he can be in the conversation.
Certainly. He's getting it done. Absolutely getting it done, as Tony Sincotta would say. Twins took on the Giants yesterday. We had a pretty good pitching matchup there with Jose Berríos going up against Jeff Samardzija. Samardzija slogged through 6 innings, gave up 4 hits and a walk, 3 runs. Kind of a tough luck loss, but, you know, he only went to 6 innings, picked up 6 more strikeouts. Jose Berríos on the other side only lasts 5 1/3, but he gets the win. Giving up only the 2 runs and 8 strikeouts. So decent pitching matchup there yesterday, but George, Samardzija falls to 2-8, but Berríos improves to 5-1.
Yeah, you mentioned it. He didn't pitch fantastic, but he pitched well enough to get the win here. By the way, I think you owe Sincotta some royalties. I think he's got that little saying patented right about now.
I did give him credit, so I did footnote him, and I always will.
Getting it done. Boy, I think Tony's been saying that forever. He's getting it done. So once again, I picked up Berríos in a couple of leagues. Was very happy to get him. He hasn't pitched as well as he did his first couple of starts, but he's pitching enough. Doing well enough to get some W's here. Samardzija's an up and down. He's probably a guy who can drive you crazy in fantasy. Probably drives the Giants crazy or whatever, the Cubs, whatever teams he plays for. Has the talent. Can't always put it together for long stretches. He's inconsistent. Pitches well for a couple of starts, then gets bombed for a couple of starts. Last yesterday was more just an average start. Just didn't go his way. But like I said, is it the guy's Mike for me? I expect more, but I know it's not coming.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Brandon Belt picks up a couple of hits yesterday. Not a ton of offense all the way around, but a decent start to highlight there because that was a pretty good pitching matchup. The Royals pounded the Padres yesterday, which, frankly, let's face it, Padres are getting used to this, right, at this point in the season. They're 24-39. But a lot of offense yesterday. Royals win that game again 12-6. They put up a 9 spot in the 8th inning, though. So a lot of this happened late, including a Lorenzo Cain grand slam. His average has dropped quite a bit lately, George, but he gives you a nice little spike in performance here, going 3-for-5, 3 runs scored, and 5 ribbies.
Yeah, it was a long day for me yesterday, Mike. You know, after the show yesterday, I go to the gym, come home, cook some cutlets so I don't have to worry about the kids all day. They get their food.
Oh, boy.
The cutlets are good, Mike. And yeah. Then all day long, my wife and I are cleaning out the garage, cleaning out the back room, and that's back-breaking work. And then I sit down, and I start watching the baseball game. And this game's on, I think, Fox Sports 1 or whatever the name of that channel is. And that 8th inning lasted forever because that's about when I turned it on. And that inning, I mean, you see Lorenzo Cain, it's the grand slam, Hosmer with a home run, so it's like, oh my God, this game won't end. And I'm thinking, why on earth is FS1 covering this game, the Royals and the Padres?
It's a great question. But Ian Kennedy picked up his first hit of the season in his first at-bat, so he's hitting 1,000.
Woo! Go out and get him!
I have Cain and Hosmer, so obviously I'm thrilled about that production yesterday. It knocked me up a couple of spots in the standings as I'm battling. I'm like in the middle of the pack, so I'm battling. And that was a nice little bump in production yesterday. As far as the pitching matchup there yesterday, it was Ian Kennedy. I guess you get a 6 innings, 4 earned runs, so nothing great there. But he didn't factor in the decision at all. As we said, it all kind of happened late. The Padres used 8 pitchers in this game, 7 or 8 pitchers in this game. Really not pretty for them, as it much of it happened. Much of it happened against their bullpen. Spangenberg 3-for-4 there. Yenjirvis Solarte 2-for-5 with a couple of ribbies. And Perella 3-for-5, three runs scored and 3 RBIs. It looks like he's a recent call up there, George.
Yeah, listen, they can call up anybody they want. Good luck for them. Ever wonder why in fantasy we don't count the pitches as hitting stats? You know, you got Kennedy gets a hit, and you don't get that.
Nice little bonus there. You get a nice little shot in the arm from Ian Kennedy base hit. We'll talk who's hot, who's not with George next. It's his weekly article. We'll see if he jinxed anybody. Mike and George back after this. Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike and George are going to talk who's hot, who's not. George's weekly addition to the base Roto Experts exclusive Edge MLB package. As we have one quick note to Giancarlo Stanton owners like myself, he got hit on the wrist last night by a pitch. Yeah, and he has been lost to this type of injury before, but X-rays are negative, so he's day to day. But man, that would have been a brutal loss because he is cleaning up right now this month, hitting .313 for the month with a bunch of homers. So luckily he is good to go. He obviously hit the big home run the other night. He missed 87 games in 2015 with a fractured left wrist after getting hit by a pitch. So I think this scared him more than anything else, George.
Yeah, that was, like I said, it hit him flush. The way he turned to start his swing, he actually turned his wrist into it. So he didn't glance it, but it hit, I mean, bam, flush. When I saw it, I'm like, oh, God, that's, you're hoping it mainly hit the meat of the wrist and not any bone, it would break. Yeah, that was a 90-plus mile per hour fastball. It hit him right on target there. It's somewhat ironic in one of my deep keeper leagues, that's a 16-team league where we have prospects. I've been in trade talks about acquiring Stanton as I need some power here. And I've been the player here they're looking for is Brett Honeywell, minor leaguer for the Tampa Bay Rays, one of their top pitching prospects. And I've been hesitant to give him up for two reasons. One, as much as a Stanton would help me, I don't think I could win this league. I'm too far out right now, and I would need to make other deals. But two, because of Stanton's injury history. And like I said, when I saw that last night, I automatically assumed it was going to be broke. You know, mainly because of how it hit him, how hard it hit him. And also because of his injury history. But I'm very happy to see, as of right now, it looks like it's just a bruise day to day.
Good. One last note, by the way. I didn't mean to skip over this. Lorenzo Cain did hit the grand slam, but it was one of two homers on the day yesterday for Lorenzo Cain. So moving on to George's who's hot, not who's hot for the week. We'll go to who's not first. And that is Addison Russell. You know that he's involved in a domestic violence investigation. So he sat out a couple of games here. They told him not to go to the ballpark on Thursday. He sat out on Friday. I believe, was he in the lineup yesterday? I don't know that he was. This is Russell.
Yes, I believe he did return. At least they said he was going to return. I'm checking now. Mr. Russell, where are you there? Shortstop. Yes, he returned. Went 0-for-2 with a strikeout.
Okay. So, well, it's perfect case in point. He's struggling with that stuff off the field. No idea. Obviously, we have to let that play out. But he sat out a couple of games here, and he's just struggling terribly. 209, probably less now No homers, no speed. What's the deal here, George?
That's the problem. What is he giving your fantasy team right now? There's no power, no speed. Average is terrible. You can't start him. Yeah, you know, I'm not saying release him, although I think you make an argument for that. You know, maybe Zach Kozart's on the waiver wire. If he is, go out and get him. You know, so so once again, I think that's that has to happen there. What's going on here? Maybe the personal problems are bigger than we think. Maybe it's been going on for a longer time. Maybe we don't know how long this investigation's been going on for. We just know it's became public now. You know, maybe some other issues going on here. Maybe it's just that, you know, whatever, sophomore slump, third-year slump, whatever you want to call it. Maybe that's a problem, too. Maybe it's just a bad season. But either way, I think more important than anything else, he can't be on your lineup right now or can't be in your lineup right now. You have to take him out, at the very least bench him, and like I said, I'm looking for alternatives.
Yeah. Next guy on the list, and somebody that I've struggled with because, you know, as you told me many times, you don't pay for closers, and you really don't pay for catchers. Well, I pay for this guy, Jonathan Lucroy of the Texas Rangers. It's June 9th. He only has 13 RBIs, George.
Yeah, catching as a whole is a vast wasteland this season. I mean, really, what catcher's doing well? And Lucroy may be the poster boy for not doing well. I mean, I didn't know what saw this coming. You know, I mean, I like Lucroy. In Texas, with that lineup, I thought he'd have a great season. He did well in coming over from Milwaukee at the trade deadline last year, so I wasn't worried about an adjustment period. You know, and that to have 13, I know he's got more than that now, but that 13 RBIs when I wrote this column, 13? I mean, come on, that's incredible, incredible. He's starting to heat up a little bit now, Mike, so maybe he's about to turn it around. It's catcher. What are you going to do? I wrote this. You know, two catcher leagues, you're stuck. You know, you're just stuck. There's nothing you can do. One catcher league, you can move on. I think there might be someone else out there, maybe an Austin Hedges type guy you can go out there and grab for power or something. But that being said, I think right now if I have LaCroix, I want to hold on now for another 7-10 days. See if the turnaround is coming here. Yeah, with catching as a whole, hate catchers, Mike. Just hate him.
Yeah, his last 30 days, he's hitting .282, which is a big improvement for where he was at the beginning of the season. But still, there's just no run production there. Two homers and 10 RBIs in those 30 days and only 5 runs scored. There's just nothing happening there. I'm frustrated by it, obviously, but what am I going to do? I'm going to release him for another catcher like he's my catcher. I just got to leave him in there.
Yeah. As I said, two catcher league, you're screwed. You're dealing with it. What are you going to do? You're not going to find anybody else out there. What are you going to find, a 28th best catcher on the waiver wire? Yeah, good luck with that. So, yeah, you're going to roll. Listen, I don't know how you feel. Would you prefer leagues to go to one catchers?
Yeah, I think that's the way to go. It's, you know, we see, I think anytime you can make an adjustment, that'll keep people from having to sift through the waiver wire for players that they don't really want is a good move. You know, like we see this in football too. Like, do we really want to like have to drop somebody and pick up a kicker for the bye week? No, like nobody knows anything anyway about kickers. So what is the point of it? Let's just get rid of it altogether. And similarly with catchers, like, great. I'm in this 12-team league. 9 of the 12 catchers that are on rosters suck, and you want me to go out and now pick up another catcher, and we have to go 13 through 24 best catchers, or as you said, find the 28th best catcher on the season because my guy hit the 10-day DL? It's terrible. It's just not a fun exercise for anyone.
Yeah, I agree. I think you put it perfectly. I mean, it becomes getting lucky, have your catcher survive, have your catcher hit. They get hurt more than any other position, you know, all the crouching they do over the summer, getting with foul balls, bats, runners. It's just a brutal position, you know. So I don't enjoy it. I prefer it to be one catcher in all leagues. I think much fairer. This way, if someone does go down to someone to grab, I mean, this is the year of the DL. It solely is. And what catcher is playing well? And that's, even Buster Posey's not having a great season. LaCroix, you already mentioned, Bob. Sanchez was out for a month ago to a slow start. Wilson Contreras has been a disappointment. I mean, it goes on and on and on. So I'm all on board for catches. One catches. You don't need to play for two.
Yeah. So Jacob deGrom, you know, so funny. Last week we were talking about it. I was like, God, this guy's, you know, he's really delivering. And then in two starts, he just gets lit up. 15 earned runs in his last 8 innings pitched over 2 starts, George.
Yeah. That's a concern. I mean, we don't think there's an injury here, so he's just pitching lousy. You know, maybe he's caught the Metsitis where nobody can see the pitch on that team. Maybe they'll have a sort of an adrenaline rush here now that Matz is back.
Yeah, you know, Zelman and Matz both gave him good starts yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you hope this is a start of a turnaround for the Mets. I mean, you hope if you own their players or you're a Mets fan. There you go, Matt Modica. So maybe it'll work out for you. But I said, DeGrom, if I'm a Mets fan, I'm concerned right now about DeGrom. What's going on? He should not, was it 15 runs now? Earned runs in two starts, eight innings pitched. What's going on here? This should not be happening to DeGrom. He's too good a pitcher for that. I'm still rolling him out there.
Yeah. Moving on to the next guy, my favorite little typo of this article, Brandon Crawford of the San Francisco 49ers. I know you're typing a ton of articles for the football package, and as I'm contributing as well, but Brandon Crawford of the San Francisco 49ers, obviously the Giants, he's struggling right now.
Yeah, he is. Once again, shortstop's another position. You know, where it's just been ouch this season. Story not playing well. You know, we talked about Addison Russell not playing well, Crawford. A lot of your guys who you're expecting bigger numbers from, not happening. Crawford, I'm not surprised about. Russell, I am. It's funny. When it comes down to Addison Russell, I don't have in any leagues, Mike, but I remember being disappointed. I wanted him, but couldn't grab him. He was going earlier than I could possibly grab him there. So I guess that worked out for me. But Crawford's somebody I wanted nothing to do with. I always thought he was playing above his head offensively in that ballpark with that team. Not the greatest offense. I didn't want much to do with Crawford, so I guess that's working out. I don't see much of a turnaround for Crawford. He's someone, once again, I'd easily move on from.
So what's funny, you mentioned shortstop. So I have a ton of – I have a bunch of multi-position eligible guys. So I've had a lot at shortstop that I can deal with and guys that I can put in. I've Segura is my guy, but he's been hurt now twice, right? So I have Javi Baez backing him up. Manny Machado has shortstop eligibility. I have Jose Peraza has shortstop eligibility. It didn't really get solved until I picked up Didi Gregorius, and I can put him in there every day. I don't really have to move him.
Yeah, I mean, it's
to your point about shortstop position. It's, you know, it's been frustrating, but Gregorius has been the guy that has kind of solved it for me.
Yeah, Gregorius. I said I think he's criminally underrated. I don't know why, because what, he wasn't.
He's my favorite player. I'm a Yankees fan. He's my favorite player on that team.
I think mine has to be Judge. I mean, it's so much fun watching that guy.
It's tough not to. Judge is number two with a bullet, though, I'll be honest. I've just liked rooting for Gregorius. He's, as you said, criminally underrated.
Yeah, I agree. I think Castro's underrated, too. Gregorius especially. And now Everett's, you know, Clara for Gleyber Torres. But, you know, I think Torres is going to be a star. But I don't think it should be over Gregorius. You know, I think you can make an argument that Gregorius has to move off shortstop because I think Torres is a better defensive player. But Gregorius has to play somewhere. And if that means he has to play at second base and you move Castro to third, whatever it is, that's fine. But Gregorius, I think you should leave this man alone. He's a really good ball player.
Real quick, last guy on this list, Brad Miller from the Rays.
I'm done with him. What, betting under 200, no power, no speed to talk of. This screams one-year wonder. Had a magical year, hit the 30 bombs last year. It's Tropicana not working out this season at all.
I think I had him on my team for like a week back in April and dumped him. So I was glad to get out on that. We'll come back. I've got a short segment next, but we'll continue to talk about this. Who's hot? We'll turn the negative into a positive. George and I will be back to talk about that and more as we careen towards the second hour of the Roto Experts in the Morning. We're back on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening on this Sunday morning. Talking about George's article on rotoexperts.com, exclusive edge, MLB package, who's hot or who's not. We went through the who's not players. We'll touch on one guy real quick and then get to a listener who put up a poll on Twitter. We'll answer his question in a moment. But Aaron Hicks, we've talked about him. Look, we talked about him a bunch yesterday. As you highlighted, he's currently batting .315 with an OBP of .426 and 8 homers. I mean, he hasn't even played, and now he's playing full-time. But, George, he hasn't technically played full-time this year, and he's putting up crazy numbers.
No, he has. When he came into the season, it was going to be Judge and right, Ellsbury and center, Gardner and left, and Hicks was going to be the spare part. He had a lot to prove. Remember, Aaron Judge didn't win the right field job over Hicks until late in spring training, I think about 3 days before opening day. Mm-hmm. You know, so X played well in spring training. You know, so it's just been great what we've seen Hicks do. He was a top prospect with Minnesota. He was, you know, and then Minnesota gave up on him, and maybe rightfully so. And they traded him to the Yankees. Cashman liked what he saw as a fourth outfielder, you know, switch hitter, a very good defensive player. Yankee Stadium, take advantage of that short porch. All of it's come true. And Hicks is having a monster season right now. Good for him. Good for the Yankees. You and I are Yankee fans. Good for us.
Yeah. They gave up on David Ortiz, too. It should be noted.
The yeah. Twins
gave up on David Ortiz. Yeah. Hopefully this is.
You think that was a mistake?
Yeah, probably. I'd say so. Greatest designated hitter in Major League Baseball history. I would say that you made a slight mistake there in trading him before you really gave him a chance to prove
that might have been an error in judgment.
Yeah, I'd say so. In any event, so Hicks is 28. He's 28. So, no, he's 27. He'll be 28 later this year. But so we still got some time here. You know, he's not a young player, but he's not over 30. You know, this could be the sign of him coming into his prime, George.
Yeah. You know, I think some players, we say it over and over again, it does take longer to figure out baseball than others. Right. It's a hard game. I mean, it's a hard game of baseball. Some guys don't play well as soon as they get up to the major league. Some guys, it does take a couple of years to figure it out, figure out how pitchers are attacking you. You know, figure out how to make those adjustments. You know, and Hicks maybe is one of those guys. It just took time. Not everyone's Mike Trout. You know, it's going to come here and mash. You know, some guys, it does take years. And even Trout struggled in his first couple of months when he got called up. It was really his first full year that he took off. So, like I said, I think some guys, you need to be patient. You need to give them a break. But we don't live in that kind of society. You know, we want instant results in all sports. You know, you think football. Back years ago, you used to get years for the backup quarterback to figure it out, the rookie quarterback to figure it out, watch behind the starter. Not anymore. Week one, you're in there.
Yep. Mitch Trubisky, see you in week five. If Mike Glennon struggles. Hicks was a first-round draft pick, 14th overall by the Twins in 08. He did struggle his first three seasons that he was up at the majors, 13, 14, and 15, and even last year with the Yankees, but it turned around, so good for him. Listener Chip Blakely, at Chip 403, George, he says, who has been the MLB DFS MVP thus far this season with 100-ish games still left to play? Jose Altuve, Charlie Blackmon, Paul Goldschmidt, or Aaron Judge? It's a DFS question.
The only thing about there is I think that depends on how often you've used these guys, right? If you haven't used them, you're probably, it depends on your personal, who you guys you keep going back to. Of the guys he's mentioned there, I mean, any one of them would be big. But with home run guys, they need to hit the home run that night for you. I would vote for Blackmon as well because, once again, it's Colorado. I think Blackmon would be my number one choice. Aaron Judge would probably be two because Aaron Judge is batting three, whatever. He has stolen some bases, too, which is nice. But I think Blackman's done it bigger success role. I'll go with Blackmon there.
Yeah, so, you know, slightly more consistent in putting up stats than the other guys. But, look, all these guys have been great. So, George and I will be back for hour number two. We'll continue to talk about hot players, and we're going to talk DFS in the next hour as well. So it's Mike and George on the Roto Experts of the Morning. Join us for hour number two on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. It's hour number two. You got Tony Sicada coming up at 9:40. We're going to talk DFS. George and I kind of taking you around the horn in MLB today. You know, the weekend Sundays are always fun, right? Because we've had a ton of games on Friday and Saturday that we've digested, and another big slate today. For those of you that are baseball junkies like us, it's, you know, these Sunday mornings are kind of fun because we can talk about, honestly, George, there's so many different storylines that we can talk about. We can just talk for 2 hours about random players because there's so much to digest on these Sunday mornings.
Yeah, it's Sunday mornings, I guess, is the calm before the storm, right? Because once football season comes, all of a sudden Sunday mornings are a wreck. You know, you try to do 10,000 different things, get ready for the game, set lineups, all answering questions, and all this other stuff. But during baseball season, it's a relaxing time. You know, we're relaxing before the games. We like that commercial we have going on here. So, I enjoy my Sunday mornings as well.
It is funny, right? There is such a big difference between Sunday mornings with baseball and Sunday mornings with football for obvious reasons. But, man, there's so much to do, we feel like, on Sunday mornings for football, and answer a million questions and trying to get it right and trying to get every last lineup change in. You know, who's hurt? 11:30 a.m. is the most anticipated time of the week for the NFL, right?
Yeah, I would say so, right? I would definitely agree. Like I said, Sunday morning is going to be different for me this year, as I'll be in studio covering the game. So I'll actually be in transit on the AMs going to the city, which I will have to do, rather than be at home manning the AR Redirect's email answer queue. So it'll be a little different for me this season, but I'm certainly looking forward to it.
That'll be fun. When is the I saw the schedule, which is tentative. What is your shift that you would be doing?
Right now, I think we have a tentative. I'm doing the early games, so I'll be doing 1 to 5 with Greg Sussman and the fantasy Jesus, Joe Galina. But I plan on staying for the at least part of the second half of the shift as well. Because, listen, if I leave at 5 o'clock, I'm going to miss the night games.
This is true.
Right, so there's no point. I'll stay and do some extra work and cover the games and keep talking about them. So yeah. I'll be there. It depends on how the games are working. You know, when the NFL has those nice little three-game slates at 4 o'clock, which we all hate, but I'll actually like. I got three TVs. I can record those three games and just watch it when I get home. So if they have three, I'm leaving at 5. But anything more than three, I'll be there till the last game ends.
Yeah, I totally understand that. And it'll be fun. You know, we do the shows out of the studio in Midtown Manhattan, right near Madison Square Garden, Studio 34, and it'll be fun. We're building out our content for the NFL now, both online at rotoexperts.com, Sports Grid, and other places, as well as really, I think this NFL season will be exciting for a lot of you that listen to us. Shows will be... I think you'll hear some new voices, but also different combinations. I'm going to be moving, most likely, again, this is all tentative, I may be moving to Sunday mornings and kicking off your day as I do now. I didn't do that last year. I did a recap show with Tony, but it'll be a lot of fun. So, look, we just wanted to talk about that a little bit. George and I will talk about who's hot in MLB after the break. And talk a little bit about an article that came out about the best draft picks ever at certain slots in MLB history. Mike and George back after this. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Talking about who's hot with George. George's next guy on your list was Austin Hedges, San Diego Padres. Says it got off to an extremely slow start this year, which accounts for his low batting average at .211. But it's been .250 since that point, and he's got some power. So Austin Hedges may be a guy, could be on some waiver wires, but Austin Hedges is a guy that's contributing. It maybe wasn't expected.
I think, with Hedges, I wanted to give some love to the Cadets since I pretty much have been berating them all season long. So I gave some love to Hedges. He did get up to a slow start, right? And even his average now hasn't truly recovered, but the power's there. Once again, two catcher leagues, I would assume he's gone, so you're not picking him up there. Sure. But in one catcher leagues, there's a chance he could still be out there. And once again, if you're looking to make a trade, Hedges is a guy you go after if you're looking for power from the catching department. That the average... And I think it's a good thing where you I shouldn't say a good thing. It shows you how sometimes you want to ignore stats. What his average is really doesn't matter because it's taking into account that horrible start. You only care about what he's done over the past couple of weeks and what you think he's going to do from this point forward.
Right. You can look at his snapshots. People say Austin Hedges stinks. He's hitting .208. And it's all like, yeah, but for the last month he's been a good contributor. So that's all you really care about, right? When you pick the guy, Fernando Rodney. Is on my team. Look at his ERA. It's terrible. But, you know, he had 9-10 starts in a row without giving up an earned run. So that's why I like having him on the team. So, in any event, moving
sample
on to the
sizes.
Next.
Sample sizes. Sample sizes.
That's right. That's right. Jimmy Nelson. As you said, you know it's a strange season when a pitcher like Nelson is still available on your waiver wire and you're dying to get him.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's when you just can't wait. Can't wait to go out and get Jimmy Nelson, a guy who has talent. We've talked about Nelson in the past years, but it didn't quite pan out for one reason or another. So, and this year's with all the injuries, pretty much anybody who's breathing has some value here. And Nelson's pitching well. Once again, I think his ERA is 3.45 or something like that. But if you look over his past, six, seven starts, it's 2.71. Past three starts, it's in the ones. He's just been fantastic right now. He's someone you want to go out and grab. I think he's more than just a start while he's hot guy. He's maybe that next tier up from that. So I don't know if he's going to be last for you all season long, but he's certainly someone you can put in your lineup right now.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of April, his ERA was 5.34, and that ERA has dropped almost 2 full points since then. So obviously, he's on fire, putting up some innings and putting up some strikeouts as well, 71 strikeouts on the season. Next guy up on the list, Neil Walker. You said everyone was worried how the Mets' offense would react when Cespedes went down. And Walker is one of the few guys that didn't really, as the team has fallen apart, it's not really because of the offense. And Walker's been a guy that just really contributed.
Yeah, I think it was the key to the very big story was Cespedes went down. Oh, my God, the Mets weren't going to hit. They're going to lose a lot of games 2-1. And that hasn't been the case at all. It's the pitching staff that fell apart. You know, Syndergaard got hurt, too. We talked about DeGrom earlier. Harvey's just not the same pitcher. We pretty much went over him yesterday. The hitting has really kept this team, I guess, somewhat afloat, if you want to say that. And Walker's been a big part of that. Right, the power's returned for him. I know he's been dealing with the back the injury. He's kept him out of a couple of days now. Came back yesterday during the doubleheader. But he's been a big part of that, where his hitting was certain to help the Mets. Him, J.J. Bruce, Conforto's been great all season long. Wilmer Flores. The hitting's been fine. It's the pitching that's been horrendous here. So good for Neil Walker. Once again, another guy, while healthy, should be in your lineup.
Last guy here, Rob Ray, Arizona Diamondbacks. Hard to trust him, especially looking at his home and road splits. At home, his ERA is 5.67 with a 1.47 whip. But on the road, those numbers shrink to 0.64 and 0.76. So what do you make of this?
I don't get it. I understand it when it's reversed. You know, when the terrible numbers are on the road, that's what we usually see. Not at home. Usually home, you know, you're comfortable. You get the home cooking and all that, and all the other garbage we like to talk about, because you're comfortable, right? Everything's fine. I guess on the road, you could say you're just knocking out all the distractions, don't have to worry about family and all this other stuff. So it's strange. Robbie Ray, I also always wondered about, you know, when you're in Arizona, obviously it's the ballpark. Ball flies out of there. You know, with this season, his last start at home was a good one, but it was against San Diego. So well, where am I going with this, Mike? I mean, do I automatically start Ray now no matter where he is? Or do I say, oh, it's against San Diego. I want to see him pitch another good start at home before I put him in there. Right now, the strikeouts are too much for me to ignore. I'm going to plug him in no matter where he is or who he's up against.
So that's it for George's article. Feel free to check that out every week. It comes out on Fridays. His close report comes out on Tuesdays, but Who's Hot, Who's Not comes out on Fridays. You know, I'd turn over to a couple of other guys from the A's, George. And Yonder Alonso puts up a four-hit day yesterday, hitting .314 on the season. So he continues to contribute in a way that probably wasn't anticipated. You know, a lot of other first basemen would have been ranked in front of him.
Yeah, I mean, wow. He's someone who could have been on this list as well, but the injuries over the past couple of weeks. Maybe next week I'll have Alonso on there. What did he go, 7-for-10 during the doubleheader yesterday?
Yes.
I mean, wow. He and Longoria had pretty much a week's worth of hits in one day, so good for both of them. So, yeah, I'm interested in here as well.
Yeah, and Sean Manaea threw one of the games yesterday, 7 innings pitched, 2 earned runs. George, he's a guy that, you know, to Matt Modica's credit, he talked about him a lot, and we've been talking about him a lot on this show, and he comes up with another big start yesterday, picking up the win.
Once again, pitching great. Oakland has some interesting young pitchers. I don't trust Triggs as much. I think a regression was coming there, and maybe it already has. But Manaea is someone I do trust. You know, I plug him in there. Wins, I think, could be tough to come by at times because of the team he plays for, a team that might only get worse if they make some trades at the deadline to try and pick up prospects and such. But, yes, I'm interested in Mr. Manaea.
Yeah, so a couple of guys hot there yesterday. Just to talk about those Rays A's games yesterday. I mean, the Oakland took the first game 7-2. The Rays took the second game 6-5 in extras. And as George said, a lot of hits all the way around. Alonso went 7-for-10. Longoria picked up 5 or 6 hits yesterday. So a lot of numbers there get inflated yesterday. Sonny Gray came out there yesterday, six innings. He gave up five runs, but only two earned. He had six strikeouts, kind of a weird stat line for Gray. Six innings pitched, nine hits, and a walk. He only gives up two earned runs, but had 10 strikeouts. So no decision, George, but Sonny Gray put up a bunch of stats yesterday.
Gray has been better, right? I don't know if he's quite being the Sonny Gray he was 2 years ago, but he's been better. So once again, Gray is someone I think Oakland's definitely going to try and move him. I absolutely think they're going to try and move him by the deadline. I think they want to move and get whatever prospects they can from him. I think Oakland also realizes, let's trade Gray before his next injury. You know, the value really goes down here.
That would be my question. What can they really get when, I mean, if we're asking that question, clearly the GMs are going to be knocking on that door.
Well, that's why
up.
I think you trade him now. You trade him back at the deadline where teams need pitching. Right? There are a few teams out there that need pitching. Now, I don't think you can get for him what you could have gotten 2 years ago. Yeah, you know, when he was really one of the best young and up-and-coming pitchers. But I think you can get something valuable for him. You know, maybe you could get you're not getting Gleyber Torres from the Yankees or someone like that. That's not going to happen. You know, you're not going to get a top prospect. But I think you get a second-tier prospect and maybe something else there. Will it be enough for Oakland to justify dealing him? That I don't know. I mean, I don't think they're not going to get the package the Yankees got for even Chapman or Miller last year. That's not happening. You know, I certainly don't think that's going to get there. But I think they can get something that's useful for the team, yes.
So there really haven't been, you know, to stay on this topic for a minute, there haven't really been any moves yet, and it's not out of the ordinary for this situation for everybody to kind of be holding their cards and seeing how things fall. But do you expect one team to really have to go out there and get something sooner than the others? We talk about the Astros. It would probably be savvy for them to go out now and try to bolster their lineup, but maybe they're waiting to hit it big and they're negotiating a bigger deal for a Quintana or whomever is the top trade chip, starting pitching trade chip. But do you expect one team more than any other to desperately go out and get pitching to bolster themselves here?
Well, when you think about it, there are some teams out there that we expect to be big-time players, right? The Astros, we talked about it yesterday with Matt. I don't think the Astros necessarily need a pitcher to win the division. I think that's pretty much all said and done. But I think they do need one if they really want to go far in October and want to be that team, the team to beat in the American League. So I think they'll be up there for a starting pitcher. The Yankees obviously could use some help there. It's funny. The Yankees' worst starting pitcher is Masahiro Tanaka, but he's not coming out of a lineup, right? Sabathia's pitching better than expected. Severino's been great. Pineda's been good. Montgomery's been better than expected as well. But an injury will happen somewhere. I think the Yankees will be a team that looks for her. Baltimore, history says no, they won't make that move. So forget about them. Minnesota, Cleveland, maybe if they're worried about Salazar not being able to get back in there. Detroit, if they want to stay in, yes. The Angels, if they stay in, but these teams are really afterthoughts. Washington, no. Mets, no. Braves, no. Milwaukee, no. Cubs. Cubs could be a player. You know, if they need that, and they do need a starter, right? Their pitching's been a big problem this year. I'd watch the Cubs. Dodgers, I got to say no. Rockies, Diamondbacks, I would say no as well.
Good stuff. But we talked about a lot of teams there. So this could be a wild market. We'll see how it goes. George and I will come back. Got DFS coming up in 20 minutes, but George and I will talk about a couple other things after the break. Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning.
All right, welcome back, Roto Experts Weekend Morning Show. I'm George Kurtz, here with Mike Fluitt. Mike Fluitt is indisposed right now. So we're going to talk to our esteemed producer, Pete Considere. Pete, how are you doing this morning?
Fantastic. A little tired, but nothing out of the usual. What's going on with you?
Oh, pretty much the same, Pete. Pretty much the same. Little tired, nothing unusual here. Getting ready for a good sports day. What's on the agenda for Pete Considere today?
Well, after the producers, I'm going to try to run home, prepare some stuff for my hockey tournament next weekend, and then I'll probably watch the Stanley Cup final game tonight.
And what's on the agenda for the producers?
Well, I have special guest Kevin Walsh coming on the show. Chris Pavona is on vacation. So we'll be talking about, we're ranking the top four sports players. So one player from each major sport in my mind. So hockey, baseball, basketball, and football. this year, what the top player was. We're going to do a little bit of NHL. We're going to talk about my fantasy baseball team, which I'm still winning with that auto draft selection team that I have. So we have a fun slate for the show today.
Always a good thing. And what time is that show, Pete?
1 to 3 p.m. Eastern every Sunday. You can listen in or on iTunes, Google Play, Audio Boom, all that.
Nice. So, we're going to watch the. You and I are going to be watching the hockey game tonight, game six tonight. I think you and I talked about it with Matt Modicki yesterday, and Mike for that matter. We both believe Nashville is going to win tonight. So, listen, I'm going to ask you a question here.
Yeah.
Let's say you and I, since you and I won't get a chance to talk again, let's say you and I are right. Nashville wins tonight. Let's call it a good game. You know, nothing. It's not 7-0 or anything like that. It's 3-2, 4-3 game, whatever it is.
Okay.
Do you start Pekka Rinne game seven in Pittsburgh, where he's played horribly this postseason in this finals and has never won a game in his career?
It's tough. I mean, I don't know if you want to start the backup. I mean, the backup doesn't really have that much experience. The name is escaping me. I'm sorry. But the backup for Nashville doesn't really
Soros,
yes. So he doesn't really have that much playing time within the playoffs. It's all been Pekka Rinne. I think you just roll with Pekka Rinne. I think he knows what he needs, what needs to be done. Yes, he's struggled in that building, but I think also with that Game 7 mentality, I think he, you know, it's going to be up to him. I really don't think they're starting their backup for a Game 7 situation.
So my
that would be sort of unprecedented, wouldn't it, George?
I would think so, yeah. I mean, I don't know for sure, but it would be pretty, pretty wild. But I was going to ask Pete one more question. All right, so let's say it goes to Game 7, Pete. Who's winning?
I got to give it to Pittsburgh. As much as I like the Predators and as much as I want the Predators to win, this winning at home thing is just the pattern has been a little too real and too exact to match, so I think that Pekka Rinne does step up his game, but I do think Pittsburgh comes away with this and gets a back-to-back win in the Stanley Cups.
I don't know how you could bet against Sidney Crosby in a Game 7 in his building.
I agree. You know what I mean? I think this is the way the series has gone. The home team's won every game. If it gets to Game 7, I don't see that changing.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, there you go. A little hockey. And
you okay,
we'll
Mike?
Know.
Everything
yeah, we'll
right?
know. I'm good. We'll know by right. basically at some point tonight.
Did you have a high five for breakfast?
Yeah. Always, George, I always got to keep it moving on Sunday mornings, make sure that I'm ready to go for the day, for the week. So I appreciate you taking over for that segment. But
good
in
save,
any event,
good save.
Yeah, so I was reading something on NFL.com earlier this morning, and it was regarding the Redskins tailback situation, which is not ideal kind of quote fodder, as I would phrase it, for lack of a better phrase. So they obviously selected a tailback in the draft, and Samaje Perine is going to be there along with Rob Kelly and Chris Thompson or whoever else might be the primary tailback. And when Matt Kavanaugh, the offensive coordinator, was asked about who is going to be the primary tailback, his quote is, "I think it's really a game-to-game evaluation, an in-game evaluation of how well he's doing and how winded he is. Does he need a blow? Does he need a rest? We just feel like we've got depth at that position with a lot of similar type players, stocky, quick-footed, strong, smart guys that can sub in for each other, which means, for fantasy purposes, that's terrible news."
It is. I mean, it's a situation, Mike, that I'll be staying away from, if possible. You know, we all like to say this. You know, I was busting Corey's chops all week because he wants to stay away from every situation or so many situations. And I understand. We all say that. Everybody has value depending on where. It depends where the value is, right? There are players I don't want, but, hey, in the 18th round, he has value. I'll take him. Washington is a situation I would like to stay away from. I mean, there's just nothing there because you don't know. Kelly, okay, was the first second down guy, maybe a touchdown guy. Thompson to kind of catch the ball in the backfield. If neither one can get it done, maybe Perine gets his shot, the rookie, that he's going to be the guy you want. I kind of like Perine in a zero running back strategy. And what I mean by that is, if I'm not drafting a running back to round 5, 6, that's when I'm going to start looking at my first guy. I'm going to need some high upside guys. You know, guys, because you're probably going to draft 6 running backs, hoping that one or two of them hit take off. Perine, Perkins, these guys who I think are perfect for that possible takeoff role.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, what we're looking at with the Washington is that we do expect them to throw the ball a lot again, right? They're a better pass-blocking team. They're actually kind of an underrated run-blocking team. They haven't had a ton of success running the ball, but at the second level, they've been pretty good. So I would say in general is we do expect a lot of throws, a lot of balls in the air from Kirk Cousins, right? He put the ball up 600 times last year. That was good for sixth in the league, just one behind, amazingly, just one behind Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz actually had more attempts, passing attempts, than Kirk Cousins did last year. But ultimately, we expect him to be in the top five of attempts. I could see him surpassing Wentz, surpassing Bortles. I don't know that he'll necessarily surpass Rodgers, but Rodgers had to do that out of necessity last year. Their running game was a mess. He won't throw more than Breeze. Flacco, God, he's no way Flacco should be up in that area, but we'll see. So I guess what I'm saying is that Kirk Cousins could be the top three in passing attempts this year, and that's how we expect it to go. So I'm going to invest in that passing game and not invest in that running game unless I'm desperate in some sort of draft scenario.
I agree. I said, you and I talked about it yesterday. I'm going to wait forever on quarterbacks. Cousins, I like Cousins. I would take Cousins on every one of my teams.
And he's been one of the guys that's been dropping, George.
Yeah. He has. Mariota's been dropping too. Guys don't trust him. There's just so many guys. That's the thing here. There's so many guys I can grab there in round 11, 12. I'll take any of them. Don't care.
You know, based on the drafts that I've seen, it's Cousins, Mariota, and Carr are dropping so much that just wait. Just wait. Double-digit rounds. I'm telling you, these are expert drafts. Double-digit rounds these guys are going in.
Yeah, and it's constant. There are too many quarterbacks right now. You and I have said it many times. Superflex League is much more strategy, much more. You and I are both playing with Scott Fishbowl. We briefly talked about it yesterday. That's a type of Superflex League. You could start two quarterbacks. I have the third overall pick in my league. I am almost certainly going Aaron Rodgers.
There you go. So, yeah, it's certainly dependent on format. Who's going to go the first two, do you think?
Probably the running backs. And if Johnson or Bell slide to me at three, I'll probably go with them. The reason I won't take Elliott is that I'm on board. I think he gets suspended. I just don't know for how long.
Got it. So, yeah, you're talking about missed games there. But, you know, Lev Bell missed a couple of games the past couple of years, and it didn't hurt his status at all. Now, clearly you would rank Elliott behind Bell, but I'm just saying that there's a chance that Elliott would be worth that number three pick even with a smaller suspension.
I don't think it's going to be a long suspension, you know, for Elliott. And listen, this is all speculation. Just from knowing Goodell is really what it comes down to here. We've all seen the video. He takes that woman's top down. That alone is suspension worthy, even though didn't file any charges or anything like that. We've seen that video. The NFL does not like that. And he did it without her permission. It wasn't like she said, go ahead. That'd be a little different. She didn't want that to happen. She just didn't mind. So I think, once again, I think he's going to get suspended. I'm thinking maybe two games, you know, and that's enough for me to stay away from him in that type of league. Once again, in a regular league, I'm not saying I wouldn't draft Elliott. Not saying that at all. If this was a regular PPR one quarterback league, I'm taking Elliott at number three. But in a super flex league where I can start two quarterbacks, and I believe in the Scott Fishbowl, I'm not 100% sure, Mike, so you would have to check this. I think it's 6 points for a touchdown pass. That's going to always beats me.
I think you might be right. I think we were talking about that. I was talking about that with somebody a couple days ago.
So that
ago.
Always, in every year in this league, and I've been kind of successful in the Scott Fishbowl, I've taken a quarterback in the first round. Now, I don't think I've ever had a top three pick before. I think my lowest might have been four or five. But in a super flex league, I'm a big believer in you have to take quarterbacks early and often, because if I don't take a quarterback at number three overall, well, my next pick is 21 or 22. I'm not getting a good quarterback then, because 8, 9 of them will be gone by then.
Yeah, in super flex league, my overall strategy is that two of those first three picks have to be QBs, right? And it, more often than not, it's going to be the first two, but it's got to be two of those first three, because it isn't a strategy where you can wait. So it is going to be obviously league dependent, and I'd say a vast majority of leagues that that our listeners play in, and that even we play in, a vast majority are one quarterback leagues. So we're going to tell you to wait all day. Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins. I mean, we're just going through the numbers. I'm telling you, Kirk Cousins is likely to be the top five in pass attempts and possibly top three. We'll see exactly how that defense plays out this year and how many pass attempts they'll need. And he's going in double-digit rounds. So That tells you all you need to know. We talk about opportunities. Is he going to have as many touchdowns as somebody like Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees? No, but we talk about opportunity. He's going to put up a lot of yards, and in a season that was, you know, not a successful one for the for Washington last year, he still put up 25 touchdowns to his 12 picks, George.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess there's so many good quarterbacks, Michael, but and two quarterbacks that you said, I'm going quarterbacks earlier, and often probably two of my first three rounds will be quarterbacks. That's where the money's made in these leagues. That's just where it is. You need to get the 6 points for a touchdown pass would lead me to take quarterback earlier, even in one quarterback leagues, earlier. But in two quarterback leagues, I'm taking him early and often. But there are a ton of quarterbacks to choose from, up to 16 for me.
Yeah, so we'll keep tracking that, obviously, all throughout June and July as drafts start to get heated up. George and I are participating in some mock drafts. We'll give you the results of those as they come throughout the remaining weeks of the summer. George and I are back with Tony Sicada to talk some MLB DFS after this. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Mike and George here until 10 when Tony Sicada takes over with Fantasy Bagels and Baseball. After that, it's Al Melchior and FanRag Fantasy Baseball, and then the producers from 1 to 3. We have Tony Sicada coming in here in a couple of minutes, and I would just say to everybody that's maybe not be listening, that is not listening on the app right now, so please download the app. Download the Fantasy Sports Radio app in the iTunes Store on Google Play and listen for free anytime, anywhere. You can hear us here every Saturday and Sunday morning. You hear Tony Sicada just about every day, 6 to 8 in the mornings. Schedules will be changing sometime soon, but 6 to 8 in the mornings for Tony, and obviously here on the weekends, Fantasy Bagels and Baseball from 10 to 12. Get all your Fantasy Sports Radio Network favorite shows on demand live by downloading the Fantasy Sports Radio app for free right now in the iTunes Store or on Google Play. It's FNTSY. So, George, as we look at the slate for the day, we'll take a look at some DFS options here in a moment. Rangers, let's see, there we go. Probable pitchers. Orioles, Yankees. You were talking about Gausman earlier. Gausman gets the start against the Yankees, and obviously he's been brutal. For the Yankees, Chad Green getting the start here, which is a result of Tanaka getting bumped to tomorrow to pitch against the Angels.
The over-under is 10. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Wow.
I'll go over. Give me the over.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking Yankee Stadium. It's what, we're going to be in the mid-80s here today, so the ball should be flying out here. Yankees scored 1,000 runs last night. Although Gausman has done pretty good against the Yankees, even though he's been terrible this year. His career against the Yankees is pretty solid here. Chad Green, I don't think we know what to expect from. You know, this is going to be an interesting – this is a bullpen game. I think Green has only told the Yankees he can go about 45, 50 pitches. If that's true, you're talking three innings. And then the rest is a bullpen. I'm going to like some Orioles today. I'll talk to Tony when he comes on about how he feels about that. But I got to feel this is a good day for the Baltimore Orioles.
Well, he's here right now. We welcome in Tony Sicada, host of Fantasy Bagels and Baseball, host of Sicada and Engel, Monday through Friday. And Tony, George is looking to stack some Orioles maybe against Chad Green here today.
Yeah, you could look at it. But the Yankees bullpen, like George is correct, they're going to get in that Yankees bullpen. And it's not a bad bullpen, one of the better bullpens in baseball, even though they're missing, you know, the big guy at the end. So I like a couple of guys. Like, I like Seth Smith in that one. Chris Davis, always in that ballpark, you know, feast or famine there against Chad Green. You could go there. And, you know, Manny Machado's been playing banged up all year, so you can't sell out there. Adam Jones hasn't hit for a lot of power there. So I like them. I don't love them. And you're going to look at it, and George talked about the 10 total today. That's a big one. Yesterday, we had the Cubs-Rockies game where the wind blowed out. We had a 12.5 total, and we didn't reach that because the Rockies, you know, all of a sudden have an elite pitching staff. But the two biggest totals today, not only the Yankees, is the Red Sox and Tigers, the first game of the day and the last game of the day.
Interesting. So Sox and Tigers there. Highest pitcher on the board for the day is Chris Archer, Tony, going up against the A's.
Yeah, I like Archer a lot today. When you're looking at it, Scherzer is pitching today, depending on how the slates go and how you put it together. But you're going to pay for Archer. You know when Archer doesn't pitch well? He gets right around double-digit strikeouts, so it's never going to be a bad day for Chris Archer. So he's a guy absolutely in play. Guy there. And if you want to find a cheaper pitcher to pair him with today, a little tougher. But I'm going to go with a guy that I think people will be off because he didn't pitch that well his last game. That's the San Diego Padres' Denelson Lamet, who pitched well his first two starts, didn't pitch well, against the Kansas City offense, which has been brutal, but they put up 12 runs yesterday. So people will shy away. Denelson Lamet is where I'm going to go with my second pitcher today and save a little cash.
Tony, how about Robbie Ray? I mean, talked about him earlier in the show. His splits at home are not good, but the strikeouts have been tremendous. Playing Milwaukee today, a banged-up Milwaukee team. How you feeling about Robbie Ray?
I like the Milwaukee offense. Somehow they still put runs together all the time. Robbie Ray never is going to pitch bad. It's that ballpark, though, is so offensive. I can do some. I got to actually get a guy in the other side of that game pitching today, Chase Anderson, who's a 21 scoreless innings, you know, in my season-long league. And I'm going, oh, damn, I got to pitch in this ballpark. He's okay today. $12,000 is a lot. I mean, it's a lot. I mean, would you rather pay $12,000 for him, or then you go and you look at Max Scherzer? It's only $1,000 more against Texas, so you'd have that. So do you just go all the way up, or do you go and look $200 more of Chris Archer versus Oakland? So it's the price that's getting me off Robbie Ray. I don't think it's a bad play.
You know, Tony, you talked a little bit about what's funny. You talked about the Rockies, all of a sudden, elite pitching staff. George and I talked about it a bunch at the top of the show this morning, how they have four rookies in the rotation right now. One of them is Antonio Sensatella today at $6,100.
Yeah. The guy's pitching crazy good. Like, I have doubted this guy a couple times. Like, it ends here because he's not a big strikeout pitcher. He keeps spawning the ground. I'll tell you what. You can throw him in there, and here's the funniest thing. I was putting together one of my season-long leagues. You know, today's the day we all go over our waiver wires. We go over the Fabs. Next week in a league that I'm very competitive. I'm right in the top of the standings. I'm going to have three Rockies in my rotation next week. How the hell does that happen? I'm like, is there something wrong with me?
Well, yes. But I don't think as far as
it has nothing to do with the Rockies.
Baseball, no, it has nothing to do with the Rockies there. This is bizarro land with Colorado. I mean, four rookie starters. We're not even talking about Gray yet, who hasn't returned here. So you mentioned one lower. How do you feel about Jose Quintana? Is there any chance you're putting him in your lineup anytime soon? This is a guy we expect to be traded in Major League Baseball by the deadline and fetch a pretty good price.
Yeah, no, he's going up against Cleveland today. Cleveland has a couple of bets: Carlos Santana, Yan Gomes, Edwin Encarnacion. All those guys have struggled this year, but they all hit lefties well, and this kid hasn't pitched well. So there's no way. His price has dropped to $7,900. And the one thing with Quintana that which kept him from being, you know, one of those top pitchers is he doesn't really strike enough people out.
True. You know, one thing about the Mets, Tony, we talked about the Mets earlier. We talked about the Mets a lot on our Saturday show because Matt Modica is a Mets fan, and they've obviously been struggling, particularly in pitching. But they got a shot in the arm yesterday from Robert Gsellman and Steven Matz, back-to-back solid starts. It looks like Lugo is lined up to pitch today. So any expectations of Seth Lugo? You know, he pitched in the World Baseball Classic. Then he's on the, you know, he's been on the DL. He hasn't been in. Any expectations for him? Not necessarily today. Then you can't throw him in there today. I mean, he's at a really cheap price, but you're just taking a flyer there. Any expectations for him to come back and contribute here?
Yes and no. Like, I think if you're looking for a guy to contribute in season-long leagues, you're going to get a guy that's, you know, a 6-7 starter. Depending on the matchups, you can go in. I actually like him better today than I do in a season-long league. You're looking at the Atlanta team, that offense isn't that great. If Lugo can get in at price at $5,100, I mean, Bryce Harper cost you more. I mean, this hit is more than this pitcher here. So if he gets you 12 to 15 points today, he pays off. So I don't think he's a bad play today in daily fantasy, but I think he's like a 3.8 ERA at the best, and he's a 7 or 8 K per 9. So, yeah, he's serviceable, but if you're in a deeper league, he could absolutely save you. But if you're in a 12-team league, I think he's like a spot starter.
All right, let's talk about some offenses here, Tony. If you're looking at a stack a team here, where are you looking?
Yeah, well, if we're going to stack a team, I like the Boston Red Sox bats against Daniel Norris. Daniel Norris is supposed to be one of the top prospects in baseball. He hasn't been able to accomplish that. So he comes in today. So the right-handed bats, the Boston Red Sox, the Mookie Betts is of the world, the Hanley Ramirez's of the world, Xander Bogaerts are there. And I also love the Washington Nationals today against Bibbins Dirks. When you have two last names in baseball, you're probably not that good because people couldn't make up their mind to give you a name. So how the hell are you going to be able to go out there and pitch? Bryce Harper and the rest of the crew, Trey Turner, I think it's the most complete team in baseball. I think they feast on this guy. Ryan Zimmerman had the day off yesterday. He'll be back in the lineup today. Anthony Rendon, it's a toss-up between the Nationals and the Red Sox for me today.
I got to tell you, I've never heard of Bibbins Dirks.
Yeah, this is his second start, I believe, second or third start. He's a guy, I don't know how he got to the majors. To be honest, if you look at his minor league track record, like, it's just one of those things. He's been around for a while, like, the numbers aren't impressive. Like, they must have ran out of people, or he was a really nice guy and decided to give him a shot. I have no idea. Like, because it cost him a lot. Yeah.
He got their own personality.
It cost him a lot of money to put all those letters on the back of his jersey, too. So he's costing them money.
How do you spell his last name? D-I-R-K-X? What is that?
No, his last name is actually Bibbins/D-I-K-X.
So what's funny is every week that we have you on, you classify a new pitcher as the worst starting pitcher in baseball. So I think Bibbins Dirks, despite being 1-0, might take the mantle.
No, I actually came with the top five rotation. He didn't make it, actually, though.
Bottom five.
Yeah, bottom five. I don't know if I can do it off the top of my head. Mike Pelfrey, Bergman, Dylan Covey of the White Sox.
You killed Covey.
Yeah, oh, my God. He was the absolute worst. And I can't.
How about Chris Tillman?
He's working at it. He's working at it. He's trying to get in there. But you got to work hard to be in the bottom five pitchers. Oh, Jared Weaver is one of them, and I forget who the fifth one is. Yeah. I came up with a rotation of the worst five pitchers in baseball that haven't worked.
Don't have to work hard to get a part of it, right?
Well, yeah. I mean,
you could just mail it in and make that bottom five.
You got to be able to have a strong neck to watch those balls go out over the wall, George, right?
Chris Tillman got a lot of exercise yesterday in that.
Yes, you got to prevent that whiplash action.
That's right. So real quick
before we let you go, we had a listener ask us this question. Who has been the MLB DFS MVP thus far this season? Jose Altuve, Charlie Blackman, Paul Goldschmidt, Aaron Judge. Obviously, depending on when you use these guys, but which guys fill the stat sheet at a DFS level?
No doubt, 100% Charlie Blackman. He hits leadoff, so you get the most at-bats in the greatest offense, probably baseball. It's no doubt. He should be the MVP of baseball.
He's right there and still doesn't get enough love. So thanks, Tony. You can listen to him from 10 to 12 on Fantasy Bagels and Baseball. Is Cha-Cha with you today?
Cha-Cha's back and better than ever.
All right, sounds good. Back after this.
Scary thought.
Back for our final segment on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Thanks for joining us this Sunday. Hope you had a good time. Tony Sicada providing some great information there on DFS. He will do the same on his show, Fantasy Bagels and Baseball. They talk about a lot of cool topics, a lot of wacky topics. Cha-Cha's back after having the day off yesterday. So a lot to go over there. And then, again, FanRag Fantasy Baseball 12 and then the producers from 1 to 3. So, George, you're talking during the break. Jake Arrieta throws today. He's been a little better as of late. It is his walk year, as you mentioned, during the break. So we expected him to be a little bit better. But 7 of his last 8 starts, he's pitched exactly 6 innings. And it's 6 in a row and 7 of his last 8. Now, 4 of his last 5 starts, 2 earned runs, 1 earned run, 4 earned runs, no earned runs. So it's been better. The ERA is still 4.46. He's 6-4 on the season. He's got 76 strikeouts in the 68 innings. So some of the numbers pretty good, but he's not going late into games.
No, he's been struggling all season somewhere. I think he's pitched a little better of late. You're right, he's not going late in the games. The Chicago Cubs pitching staff as a whole, starting pitching staff, has been a problem. They're not getting the kind of production they did last year, for whatever reason that is. And Arias is a part of that problem. I expected bigger things out of him. Once again, walk year, I tend to like players in their walk year because also they seem to have big years always, or what it seems like always anyway. So you worry with Arias. He's not, you know, he's not a young kid. He's up there in age. You wonder if maybe the innings are finally starting to add up where he's not going to be that dominant pitcher he once was. That he could still be good, still be useful, but not be dominant. So I think it's curious to say the least, but I like the way he's pitched of late, so he's in my lineups.
He's 31 years old. Yeah, he's certainly a guy you want in your lineups, but he's pitched in. He's pitched more than six innings one time this year. That was more than 2 months ago on April 9th. So something to keep in mind. The ratios are pretty good, but again, not compiling as many stats as you might have anticipated because he's not going late into games. Anyway, our esteemed colleague Mike Cardano sent out an article on Twitter earlier this morning that you and I were tagged in, I think ostensibly so that we could talk about it, but we had a lot on the slate already today. And it effectively is trying to figure out who is the best draft pick at each position in the draft. So, for example, Alex Rodriguez, as well as Chipper Jones, Carlos Correa, Bryce Harper, and Ken Griffey Jr. were all the number one overall player picked in the draft. And they picked A-Rod as the, this is via ESPN, and the writer of the article is Sean Morrison. And they said A-Rod was the best ever. The problem with this article, it is all related to WAR. And yes, some of these are right. If Chris Bryant is better than Reggie Jackson, Evan Longoria better than Manny Machado and Robin Yount, I don't see that. But the one where I really raised an eyebrow, Ryan Braun they have here because he's got the highest WAR per season. Better than Buster Posey and Mark Teixeira. Would you consider Ryan Braun to be a better player than Buster Posey?
Yeah, catcher. I would take, if I'm drafting, I'm taking Braun over, regardless of the steroid problems, I'm taking Braun over Posey, yeah.
A couple of easy ones here. Bonds at six over players like Jeter and Zach Greinke. Kershaw at seven. It doesn't matter really who was there going up against him, but it happened to be Frank Thomas and Troy Tulowitzki. But they have Francisco Lindor here over Todd Helton and Jay Bell. So it's an interesting article nonetheless. I just wanted to see Kevin Apier at number nine. Better than Barry Zito and Jared Parker? I'd say so. And to finish out that top ten, Mark McGwire over Robin Ventura and Madison Bumgarner, who was also the number 10 pick in the draft. Would you take McGwire over Bumgarner?
Probably not. I'm probably going Bumgarner there. McGwire is pretty much a one-trick pony hitting those home runs, which is valuable, but I'm probably going to go a different direction there.
I'd say so. So interesting article to take a look at. You can check it out on Twitter. I'll retweet it so you guys can yell at each other on your own time. But thank you for joining us this Sunday morning. George and I will see you next Saturday along with Matt Modica, and we'll be back here next Sunday. But thanks for joining the Roto Experts in the morning. It's Fantasy Bagels and Baseball next on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks to Pete Considori. Have a good week.